Good day, Internet.
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 Okay, 5 for 5. We're doing well so far.
5 for Friday, if we want to beat the band.
There we go.
5 for Friday. There you go. Ooh, a little hand situation.
Cinnamon churros for everyone.
Rob DeMillo, we're so glad to have you. I'm going to introduce you again, but for everybody who's already joining the stream, they know that you're with us. Yay!
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 And it's good to be here. Thank you, Sarah.
Well,
virtual hug.
Yeah, virtual hug. Indeed. Well, it is 1 p.m. Pacific time, so I think we're going to get right into the show. What do y'all say?
Let's do it.
Imagine if someone's like, not me.
Yeah.
Can I have 15? All right. All right. I will count myself in. In 3, 2. This 10th year of Daily Tech News Show is made possible by its listeners. Thanks to all of you, including Carmine Bailey, Vince Power, Rodrigo Smith Zapata, and our new patron, Eric. On this episode of DTNS, Lenovo announces the Legion Go handheld, plus quite a few other things, autonomous drones, surprise and delight, and our tech IPOs finally making a comeback? This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, September 1st, 2023. From Studio Underscore, I'm Sarah Lane.
From Columbus, Ohio, I'm Rob Dunwood.
Drawing the top tech stories from Cleveland, I'm Len Peralta.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
I'm the obligatory Rob DeMillo.
Rob DeMillo, Chief Technology Officer at Skidmore, Owings, and Merrill. So good to have you on the show. You're so good at this. You were just going to introduce yourself.
I'm so sorry.
Don't be sorry. No, it's you know what you're doing, and that's why you're on the show. And we're going to talk with Rob about all of the things, and those things are going to start with the quick hits. Magic Leap announced its One AR headsets will cease to function after December 31st, 2024. So you have some time. You can't buy a Magic Leap One anymore, but the company says it will be supported through the cutoff date. Support includes outages that impact core functionality, although Magic Leap says we will be at the discretion of what that means. Troubleshooting with customer care, cloud services, valid warranties, all supported through the end of next year. Magic Leap 1 launched back in 2018, mid-year, powered by a tethered waist-mounted compute pack and included a single-tracked controller with hand-tracking support that came later. So pour out a little liquor.
Paris has banned e-scooters following a referendum back in April where 90% of residents, or at least the ones who voted, favored getting rid of them. Tier, Dot, and Lime all previously operated in the city with a combined 15,000 e-scooters. E-bike services in the city aren't affected, and privately owned scooters are still allowed. Dot says it will rehome its 5,000 scooters to other markets with high demand, such as Belgium and Tel Aviv. Tier says the majority of its scooters will go back to Germany or Warsaw, Poland, and Lime will ship their scooters to Lille, London, Copenhagen, and cities in Germany.
Scooters. Out of Paris into other markets. Meta is doing whatever it can to bump up the engagement of its new social network Threads. Saw a lot of signups and then a lot of drop in engagement. And as noted by many users across the world, is using Instagram, the company is anyway, to show a For You on Threads carousel with a button to open Threads directly from your phone. A company spokesperson for Meta said, "We have added a number of new features to the app since launch and are now making it easier for people to see their latest content from Threads directly on Instagram."
Starfield is already in the hands of some folks with early access, and if you are lamenting the exclusion of support for NVIDIA's Deep Learning Super Sampling, or DLSS, don't worry, modders got you. IGN notes that at least 3 Nexus mods have created a mod that adds not only support for DLSS, but also Intel's Xe Super Sampling, or XeSS. Mods also added a field of view slider not currently available in the game's own PC version. Starfield's official launch date is September 6th.
Sony announced the PlayStation Portal will launch on November 15th. The Portal will be available to stream PlayStation 5 games over Wi-Fi. It also costs $200. Pre-orders now open in the US, UK, France, and Belgium from Sony's official PlayStation Direct storefront. Sony wrote on its blog for PlayStation that other retailers will offer pre-orders starting September 29th. That's when other markets will be open, and support will be open as well for regions like Canada and Japan. And those are the quick hits. Okay, let's talk about Lenovo's big ol' Friday dump. Don't know why you did it, Lenovo, but we're going to talk about it because everybody else is. Lenovo announced the Legion Go, its first Windows-powered gaming handheld that's set for an October release for $700. Specs include an 8.8-inch QHD Plus screen, an AMD Ryzen Z1 Extreme processor, a 49.2-watt-hours battery, and controllers that can pop out from the chassis. The Verge notes that it's less of a Valve Steam Deck competitor and more of a cross between the Nintendo Switch and Asus's ROG Ally. The screen is 2560 by 1600 with a 144 hertz refresh rate. 1440 would be great, but no, that's not what we have here. The guts also include 16 gigs of LPDDR5X RAM and up to 1 terabyte of internal storage. There's also a 3.5-millimeter audio combo jack. Some people will be excited about that. 2 USB-Cs, one on the front and one on the back, and a micro SD reader.
Lenovo also announced a new Legion 9i, also slated for an October release, for a very specific $4,399. For that price, you get a 16-inch gaming laptop with a self-contained liquid cooling system. This differs from traditional air cooling and is designed to handle much more thermal mass.
Oh, but Rob, Lenovo did not stop there. No, no. We've got one other announcement. The company's new Legion glasses function as an external monitor for devices that support screen pass-through for AR glasses. Now, you might say, oh, so it's for the Legion Go, and what Rob just explained is the Legion 9i. Yeah, those are the obvious companions, but you do have other device options when compatible. The Legion glasses mimic a 27-inch monitor and can display at 60 hertz and 1080p per eye. The display also uses a micro LCD panel, plugs into a USB port, and features built-in speakers, sound, and brightness controls. You might say, I like it. What does it cost? $329.
So if you add all these
right,
up.
Rob DeMillo. Let's talk about these. What are you buying, if anything?
I'm going to roll back also to the Sony conversation because I think it all kind of ties in.
Sure.
So I'm confused. Reddit is making fun of the Sony product, right? Like if you go to the Sony subreddit, it's brutal. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that there's already the Sony Play app that runs on Sony phones and all that, which I use, and it works really well. So I have no interest in getting the Sony, what do they call it? The Portal.
Uh-huh.
In the case of Lenovo, it's an interesting little product. I'm always confused by companies that cap out at 16 gigs of memory on these things, because you're going to notice that, right? It's great that it has all these other features. And I'm one of the people that's jazzed about the audio combo jack. Like that kind of stuff. I dig all of that. But this thing is going to make or break itself on how fast it runs, because it's a gaming rig. Right. And so having 16 gigs, I do not understand. So there's that.
Yeah. I kind of agree with Rob, because here's the thing. When these are PCs, I mean, this is a, you know, it's a computer, for a lack of a better word. You expect it to run like your computer, but they're cramming all these parts in. They don't give it an abundance of RAM. So when you compare it to running on a computer, you're going to think it's a little bit sluggish, or you're going to think it's a little bit slow, because they can't put all of the hardware in there, because it would be just immensely expensive. So I think that, you know, companies are ultimately, they're chasing steam. And I don't know that anyone has quite figured it out yet. You know, this, you know, the Steam, what Steam has is kind of awesome. I think everybody is trying to capture that lightning in a bottle again.
Yeah, I agree. And the 16 gig thing, it's like, I hate keep harping on it, but it's like a dime. Like, I don't understand, like just put another 16 gig in there. Who cares? Like, what difference does that even make to you as an OEM? So that's a little odd. And Rob, you're right about the catching up to Steam, right? I mean, it's, everyone wants to do it.
So, well, let's move on. Let's talk about, for the first time ever, a neural network powered autonomous drone has been able to beat human pilots in high speed FPV drone racing. A team of researchers from the University of Zurich and Intel have developed a system called Swift, in which they came up with an autonomous breakthrough based largely on machine vision, putting the AI system on a more even footing with human pilots.
Yeah, so before Swift came about, researchers had to rely on a special motion capture system, to win against humans. Their new solution uses real-time data collected by an onboard camera, similar to those used by human racers. It also incorporates an integrated inertial measurement unit that measures the drone's acceleration and speed. Kind of knows what's going on in real time. That data is set to a neural network for processing, which allows the fully autonomous drone to win against multiple human FPV champions. Now, my first thought here was like, oh, it's like chess, where the machine is finally better than the human, but for drone racing.
I think chess is actually more interesting. Like chess is more of an interesting problem. I mean, this is a very robotic task. Like for AI to jump into this, I think this is the first time that a AI has powered a physical device in a contest kind of situation. I could be wrong about that, but that's what I remember seeing earlier. I mean, of course it does better than people, right? It's like, I don't understand why this is even a thing, like why this is a news article. I mean, maybe one of you guys can explain it better than I am.
Well,
but it's
So compared to the, you know, ongoing conversation ad nauseum, really, about autonomous vehicles on, mm-hmm. on roads, sure. And whether or not they take out a lot of human error, but at the same time, they're not humans. So we're still doing some sort of a hybrid form of both. I feel like this is a little bit more of it's that conversation, but hey, look what the machine can do.
Yeah, but it's kind of like autonomous vehicle. That's a much harder problem. Right. This is a confined course with a very strict set of rules. Nothing's going to get in your way except the other contestants. So it just feels like it's like, okay, sure.
I think what's cool about this is that when you think about these drones are relatively small. So for them to be able to get enough stuff on the drone for it to be able to still fly at these speeds, I mean, these things are going really, really fast. Yeah. And it be self-contained. I mean, it is fully autonomous. That is kind of the thing here, because before they had to actually rely on these high-end imaging systems that you couldn't put onto the device. You had to, they had to be tethered, even if wirelessly, to something else to do that processing. And that's now happening on the actual drone. The other thing is, when you start looking at where this technology can go, like search and rescue was something that was mentioned. You can send these drones out and they can fly very fast while they have their charge and actually survey large areas relatively quickly. There are other things that they could do, such as, forest monitoring or space exploration, or just things where you need devices that they don't know exactly their environment. So they need to be able to make decisions on their own. This mm-hmm. is the precursor to that. So I think eventually this could really be some cool technology as we build Skynet.
Yeah. Oh God. Oh God. We're all going to die. Yeah.
I mean, the Maui fires come to mind for something like this, right? You've got a bunch of humans who are working as hard as they can to make sure that everybody who, needs to be safe can be. This is great technology for something like that, where it's not even hours or minutes, but seconds that matter. And, you know, I can see those situations being really great examples of why this when Rob DeMillo, where you were like, is this cool? It's like, well, it can be. It can be cool.
It's you know, it's going to get cooler, too, because, you know, one of the things the story notes is that as soon as parameters changed, the drones became significantly less efficient. So basically, they were trained on a very specific course with very specific lighting with gates in specific locations. And as soon as that changed, they, you know, I don't want to say they fell out of the bottom, but they don't do as well when they're not trained specifically on the environment that they're in. So there's still some work to be done here, but the fact that they could actually, in a, you know, control situation, beat human champions. I mean, these gentlemen are, you know, people are really good at flying these drones. The fact that they could actually get that done, to me, is pretty impressive.
Yeah, but that's kind of my point, right? I mean, if you take one of these things and you put them out in the field, you know, to Sarah's point about looking for folks in the Maui fires, it's a different environment. Like it's a lot, there's a lot more activity going on around the drone. They can bring the drone down. Also,
variables different.
Yeah, 100%. Right, and so it's a different problem set. Also, I would look towards the military. Right, we've had drones for a long time in the military. I mean, there's tech in there. I wouldn't even call it AI. It's just very good at dealing with environmental situations and what have you. But it we should be beating on their door for rescue drones and that sort of thing. I just don't see how this made the news. That's my only comment about it. It seems very sort of computer science 101 or something. I know I'm being kind of a goofball about this, but
you're just too smart.
I'm curmudgeonly.
This is CS101.
I'm curmudgeonly.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from. I think we're early, and at some point they have to try it in order for it to be what it's going to be at someday. So this is, you know, like I said, this is not the Terminator T-1000 yet. You know, this is like the T-6. they're trying to get to that point. And I think that eventually the use cases will absolutely make themselves, available to us.
Excellent.
Well, Tom Merritt is, he's hopefully having the best time in Seoul, Korea right now, but his How to Make a Great Podcast class was a big hit. Many of you said we weren't able to make that class. Where can we, you know, find it somewhere else? Good news. You can still get the online course at our DTNS Patreon store. Tom explains the fundamentals of producing a really good podcast. And, you know, who else better to do it than Tom Merritt? He is good at this. You can download the class or stream it over at patreon.com/DTNS/shop. All right, we hear terms like IPO, initial public offering, company going public, NASDAQ. These are all terms we talk about on DTNS. If you're listening, you know what those terms are. But tech IPOs have had a hard time of it for the better part of 2 years, maybe a little bit more, depending on where you are on the spectrum. But things seem to be blooming again. This week, grocery delivery startup Instacart and data and marketing automation company Klaviyo both filed IPOs. Obviously, we talked about this last week. SoftBank owned chip designer Arm, which has an arm, I guess, which is SoftBank, announced plans to join the NASDAQ 7 years after being taken private in a $32 billion acquisition. So we've got some movement, right, Rob?
Yeah, absolutely. So for anyone who isn't following financial markets so closely, a lot of this is locked into timing. For example, Instacart's valuation was shaved ahead of its IPO, which made it more attractive to investors. Meanwhile, DoorDash, let's call it Instacart's closest public market comparison, trades at 3.8 times Instacart's revenue. The way SEC rules work, management teams and bankers have to wait at least 15 days after the IPO filing before they can start their roadshow, with an offering taking place 2 weeks later. So Rob, you know, I know you've got some expertise in this area. Can you explain to us what a roadshow is, and does the timing of the roadshow significantly impact it in any meaningful ways?
Well, the IPO timings are important, right? So there's been less IPOs, obviously, over the last several years because of everything that's been going on in the economy. And then the IPOs themselves, within a given year, they've got seasons, I guess is probably the best way to think about it. You want to avoid the holiday season. You want to avoid summer because nobody is paying attention. But if you target the spring and the fall, which is usually when these things happen, not a rule, but it's usually when they happen, they'll go on these things called roadshows. And you can think of a roadshow as like an album release party. Kind of, you know, we're coming.
Like you're getting on the tour bus.
Yeah.
You're hitting the road. Yeah. 100%. You're getting people pumped.
Yeah, 100%. There's usually involved in the an IPO is usually something that includes the board, the executive team at the small company, and they often hire an underwriter, which is an organization. It's either a person or a bank or a financial institution that will put themselves financially at risk in order to help increase the cost of the PR for the IPO. And so some combination of those folks will put together slide presentations, maybe a demo, and they'll hit key market cities, you know, Boston, San Francisco, New York, in Canada, it'd be like Vancouver and Toronto. And they'll go on these road shows, and it's literally what you're thinking of. There'll be a big stage presence, drones, literally, you know, drones and like maybe lights drones. And cameras. And, yeah. And all that stuff. And they'll try and drum up support and more times than not, it does exactly what it's supposed to do. Back in 2020, I think it was when Alibaba hit the markets, a lot of their success was based off of some of these roadshows. So it can go several different ways. It can either be a flop of a roadshow, or it can be a roadshow that actually generates a lot of interest and excitement and activity around the company that's trying to pop onto the market.
Now, okay, so Rob, you mentioned summer and holiday season being sort of like dead times.
Yeah.
The summer I get, we're in our summer slump now, although there's plenty of news to talk about, thankfully for us. But holiday season, I don't really understand, because isn't a holiday quarter supposed to be, especially for, I don't know, if you're selling hardware, you know, a place where you're going to make a lot of your money?
For a consumer, yeah, but if you're on a roadshow, you're not interested in the consumer at this point. If you've got a company that you're trying to bring on market, and you go on one of these roadshows, your target is going to be the investors, financial institutions, individual investors that want to, like, you know, get in on the ground
floor. So it's not about what you're selling; it's right. about who's buying into the eventual sale.
And let's face it, like in the holiday season, all the venture capitalists and financial institutions are all like skiing at Stowe and things.
Yeah, they're in Bali.
They're not paying any attention at all. Yeah,
right.
So, long, 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 long time ago, I actually got to attend a roadshow. I was kind of working. I was supporting the people who were doing the presentations and making sure that they were technically correct in the things that they were saying. Mm-hmm. But Rob, as you said, it's kind of like it's a giant party.
Yeah.
Of people and institutions with lots of money, and you're trying to get them to get in on that IPO. So
that's right.
So, you know, Sarah, to your point, it's doing it right before Thanksgiving, that is not the time to have it done, because the people Davos or something like that. They're not there.
Yeah, they don't care. They have no interest in what's going on in the market at that point.
Well, so Rob DeMillo, what are you thinking about? You know, we've got obviously ARM, big one. And that was being teased for, you know, a year plus, and, you know, we're finally there. You've got a couple of other tech IPOs that have sparked people to say, okay, we're back. What do you think?
What do I think about IPOs being back?
Yeah.
They've never gone away, really, but, it's definitely, I'm hearing more and more and more about it. Right. So, you know, it's gone through this kind of cyclic adventure over the last couple of decades, where there were a ton of IPOs. A lot of them just fizzled on hitting the ground. Right. And that soured a lot of folks getting involved in IPOs. So the IPO market dropped, and then it's been too long. And so, there's just this little ebb and flow to the way all this stuff works. You know, the global pandemic did not help, in this last this last couple of years. But as we're starting to come out of the cloud, no pun intended, as we're starting to come out of the pandemic cloud, people are starting to get interested again, and people want to turn these engines back on, right? And it's not just in the tech industry, it's a lot of industries. You're seeing IPOs starting to show up again, but it's a lot more discriminatory. So back in the heyday, anybody with a website and, you know, a plastic trinket to sell could do an IPO. And now it's not quite sure bets, but people that are companies that are a little bit more backed and have a little bit more traction in the market and a lot more people using their services or buying their product or whatever the heck it is. And those are the ones that are generating all of the interest right now. I think eventually we're going to wind up going back to, you know, I've done this thing in the basement and I think it's really good and I need some money. So I'm going to try and IPO myself. But right now it is the Instacarts and the ARMs and the companies that have been around for a little bit.
Well, I'm not sure when you, Rob or Rob, last bought a Hallmark card to give to a loved one. You know, maybe it was an anniversary or a birthday or, dads and grads type thing. Hallmark, the card company, is partnering with Venmo to let people send money along with physical greeting cards. Okay, let me explain. Hallmark plus Venmo cards will let anybody who wants to send money choose a card for a specific occasion, then scan a QR code, and then set an amount that they want to give that is associated with that card. So all I have to do is give you a card and say, you know, congratulations. Also, scan my QR code and get that $40 that I'm also giving you. So if it's my birthday, I get my physical card. I scan the code. I get my money in my Venmo account, if I have a Venmo account, which many people do. Venmo says that 78% of its users are already sending money as gifts. So this is something that Venmo is obviously banking on, you know, people wanting to do more of. The new option will cost you. It's $5. It's available online in physical Hallmark stores and other select retailers. So you are paying for the option to be on the pulse of tech, I suppose.
Yeah. My question on this is, are you paying $5 for the card or are you paying $5 for the option to send someone money?
You're paying $5 for the option to give people money.
So you're paying $4.95 for the card.
Which is ordinarily free to do.
Yeah. It's a $5 fee to participate in this fun experiment. That's what's going on here.
I see where other
Robin's going. Let's say my Aunt Bertha lives, I don't know, in Belgium, right? We were talking about Belgium earlier, so it's on my mind. And she can't be near me. There's no, you know, I don't know. I don't know if this is like the worst idea or the best idea.
It would be a really good idea if there was no surcharge, I didn't realize there was a $5 surcharge for doing this,
or even if it was like 59 cents or something. But the fact that you have to spend money, money,
yeah,
when you could send it for free without actually doing this, is kind of confusing.
I mean, I have to assume that these companies are used to people, myself included, who sometimes go like, oh, you know, let's say I'm putting PayPal money into my bank account. Like, do I want it to be immediate? That's a little bit of a charge. Or do I want to wait 3 days, which would be free? Most of the time, it's 3 days. But sometimes I'm like, yeah, immediate. I got to pay up front. So I think that this is a little bit more of that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Although, you know, there's something thrilling. Like, I remember being a teen and opening up the card and the $20 bill fell out. That's pretty cool. There's a QR code and it's like, why is my Aunt Matilda trying to sell me golf clubs or whatever the heck it is?
Well, it's been a long time since we were children. I was telling the guys the other day, but you know, every Christmas, my Uncle Rich wrote me a check for $40.
Oh,
it was always in the card. Right. you know, where I was like, $40. Oh my gosh. You know, at the time you could buy anything with $40. All right. Well, you know, if you like Hallmark cards and you use Venmo, that is an option for you potentially going forward. But we've been talking ad nauseum about all this stuff today. So Len Peralta, let's check in with you and figure out what you've been drawing.
Oh, you know, I know that Rob DeMilla was not excited about the drones too much. But maybe this, my art today will help that. You know, so I don't know if this is a thing around the country, but here in Cleveland, we have an air show. And I've been thinking a lot about the air show. And so this is a little bit of an homage to that. It's AI beating the drone, which is run by Dumb Old Human, if you get that. You know, it's that's the name of this piece. It's called Dumb Old Human, and you can get it at my online store, lenperaltastore.com, or at my Patreon, patreon.com/Len, where you back me at the Len Lover level, and you get this image. And I know it's not exactly the way that drones work. Like, don't talk to me about that, but it's more of kind of an interpretation. So enjoy.
I'm more excited about your drawing. Artistic, than I am about that. Yeah, I
mean, that's what I thought. I thought you might like that, Rob. Thank you.
So, Rob DeMilo, can you just give, you know, thank you so much for being on the show with us this you know, this Friday afternoon. So, could you tell everybody how they can contact you? You know, we, you know, tell us what you got going on, what you're doing.
Y'all know this already, but I'm the technology officer over at Skidmore, Owings & Merrill, architecture firm, worldwide architecture firm. You can find out all about me and all the places that I am by going to about.me/Rob DeMilo, and you can connect with me there. I'm always around and available.
Excellent. Well, we're so happy to have you on the show with us, as always.
Absolutely. And patrons, stick around for the extended show. Good Day Internet. It's our second round of GDI debates. We take on great questions of the day. Come debate with us.
Oh, the last time we did this, Rob and I were doing questionnaires. He won. I don't want to talk about
you, it. You guys did not know that I was a space nerd. I think that's what it was.
Yeah.
I think we were talking about space or something like that. So, yeah.
Well, just a reminder that our show, Daily Tech News Show, is live Monday through Friday. We're always on demand, of course. But if you can catch us live, we'd love to have you. 4 p.m. Eastern, 2000 UTC. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. Just a reminder, we are off Monday for the U.S. Labor Day holiday, but we're back on Tuesday with Patrick Norton joining us. Talk to you then. Have a great weekend, everyone. This week's episodes of Daily Tech News Show were created by the following people: post-producer and writer Tom Merritt, post-producer and writer Sarah Lane, executive producer and booker Roger Chang, producer, writer, and co-host Rob Dunwood, video producer and Twitch producer Jill Coos, technical producer Anthony Lemos, Spanish language host, writer, and producer Dan Campos, science correspondent Dr. Nikki Ackermans, social media producer and moderator Zoe Detterding, our mods Beatmaster, W. Scottus One, BioCow, Cap Kipper, Steve Guadarrama, Paul Reese, Matthew J. Stevens, a.k.a. Bet Gadget Virtuoso, and J.D. Galloway. Mod and video hosting by Dan Christensen. Music and art provided by Martin Bell, Dan Luters, Mustafa A., Acast, and Len Peralta. Live art performed by Len Peralta. Acast ad support from Tatiana Matias. Patreon support from Tom McNeil. Contributors to this week's show include Nicole Lee, Scott Johnson. Plus guests on this week's show included Tasia Custodi and Rob DeMilo. And thanks to all our patrons who make the show possible.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Woo-hoo. Woo-woo.
Good show, right, folks.
Great show. Awesome.
A wonderful show.
I stepped on your opening. I'm so sorry about that.
The Twin Robs. No, you didn't. I mean, you stepped on nothing. You step wherever you like.
What?
Other Rob.
Other Rob. I could be Other Rob.
So if you're on again, I'm just going to go with, you know, my first thought. I'm just going to go with Arbiter of Awesomeness. I'll go ahead and change.
Okay. All right. We'll do that.
That way folks won't get
confused. A of A. I think that's kind of cool.
I could be Bald Rob.
Come on.
Be Bald Rob.
No, yeah. You know what? Rob. I'm going to find another individual who might have a bald.
Follically challenged? Is that the word you're looking for?
Follically challenged individual. Also named Rob. And if they're not named Rob, we're just going to nickname them Rob.
Follically challenged.
Call them Rob anyway.
It's more of like, you just changed my name to Rob. And I've made a decision. Not challenged. Can we call you Rob? I'm empowered.
Rob Peralta.
Yeah.
Rob Peralta. I like Rob that. Lane. Rob.
Rob Lane. Yeah.
Rob Merritt.
Rob Lane sounds like a production company.
It does, actually. or a street where people get murdered.
Real quick, before we get into all the fun, just a reminder, if you are watching us live today, type the word, it's Friday, you guys, just give me a break.
I feel better that you did that.
Type the word office, all lowercase, in the Twitch chat for a chance to win a 20% discount for the DTNS store. The code will be whispered to you on Twitch and is valid for 1 week. Again, that is office, all lowercase. Office.
Oh, no, not yeah. Bureau, sir.
You know, like that place you used to go before you stopped
Nick
wearing
with the
pants.
C, not off ice. It's the summer. There's no ice here. Office? No. Stoic squirrel, not that word. And I know you're a squirrel. So. Quick reminder, if you want to vote on the great titles that have been flowing in, go to dtns.showbot.tv. As we begin the festivity of debating right now.
Oh, boy. I'm into it.
So for folks who were not here on the last episode when we had Chris Ashley and Sarah face off in monumental debates of world import, what happens is I give out a topic, and then ideally there will be two camps that will form, one arguing for the topic or the thesis of the topic, and the other decidedly against it. So with that,
it could backfire on you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it could backfire, but that's why I've only chosen the most solemn topics that people would never deign goof around with because it's so important. So here's the first debate topic.
I mean, that's the fun thing about tech people is like you know, you just introduce a topic and we all just agree.
Yeah, we all know. We all agree. We never debate.
It's true for fandom too. Fandom.
Yeah. There's no.
If there's anything the internet has taught me is that people get along together all the time.
Yeah,
all the time.
It's perfect. It's utopia. It is utopia.
Yeah. Indeed. Okay.
All right, first topic.
Let's do it.
With the recent lackluster box office returns to several high-budget superhero films like Shazam! Fury of the Gods, The Flash, and Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania, my question to you all is superhero movie fatigue real? And, AKA, are people tired and done with the superhero movie genre? Or is it for another reason that all these movies have sort of kind of augured not so well in the past 4 or 5 months?
So who starts? How does this? Who starts?
Whoever wants to start.
Start with you, Rob Namillo. Go.
So, again, geek, right? So, been a nerd since I could crawl. Love all this stuff. I am done. Like
fatigue.
Oh, good Lord. The last ones I saw, I saw Quantumania. I just watched The Flash when they released it on the WB.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this, though. Could it be fatigue, or could it be that the writing and everything else is just not up to par? And ding, the reason ding, I ding, say ding. Is because I have seen a couple of superhero projects that have been real stinkers, but James Gunn's Guardians of the Galaxy 3, his the Suicide Squad, his version, I felt was good. So could it be that just the wrong writers and directors, there's just a fatigue among them, possibly?
Yes, and a combination of those things, right? So yeah, I 100% agree with you. The last first Suicide Squad movie was terrible. The last Suicide Squad movie was wonderful. James Gunn's probably there's no coincidence there. His what's the one with John Cena on
Peacemaker.
Wonderful, right? So all the anti-hero stuff and it, like that helps a lot. You're right about the writing. I am, and this is a guy who made his early career on computer graphics. I cannot handle another computer graphics lead. My eyes just go into this visual gestalt, and I have no idea what's going on the screen. It's terrible. But
I'm with you, Lynn, because I think that a lot of these movies, when you think about like the Dark Knight, that series of Batman movies, those were really, really good movies. Set aside the Christian Bale ones, set aside the fact that he is like a non-powered superhero, the actual storytelling, the movie was really, really good. When you think of the original Iron Man, when you think of Captain America, when you think of Endgame and Infinity War, those were actually really good movies.
Yeah,
I think a lot of what's happened is that a lot of these movies are just movies are in the eye of the beholder, but in my eye, like The Flash was it was just terrible. It was nothing compelling about that movie.
You almost had a great title right there. So, and I will add, even though
can I ask a Flash question? At some point here, can I ask a Flash question?
Yeah.
Please.
One that's been bothering me that I hope you don't have to beep. So, the Flash movie emphasized again that the Flash like consumes a lot of food in order to like create his impossible speeds.
Yes.
And I'm assuming that the consumption is 100% conversion to energy. Does he poop? Does the Flash poop?
This is
now if you were
I spent the entire film wondering if the Flash pooped.
Pretty so, important.
That's
question.
A debate unto itself. So, it sounds like.
I mean, so this is my kind of take on the whole thing. I think there is a number of inconsistencies that carried over from franchise to franchise, whether or not like Superman, Superman knows his, his mother died or some sort of piece that kind of disjoints everything. And I think there's a with the success of the original Disney phase one of the Disney and phase two of Disney's MCU, a lot of studios were very excited to jump on that bandwagon because all they saw were dollar signs, right? Mm-hmm. Like, man, they're making mint off this. And so my personal view is kind of people are fatigued, but people are fatigued because they're seeing the same movie over and over again with different characters, but it's the same plot, it's the same story. Mm-hmm. Sure, it's a different world-ending device, but it's still a world-ending device. It's always, you got to stop giant, either Galactus, or you got to stop Thanos, or you got to stop the Death Star. You got to stop. All these movies have essentially the same plot, and I think people are fatigued with, okay, I know this story.
Right.
The hero is different, the villain is different, but it's the same story. I've seen it already. And I think when people are subjected to 12, almost 15 years of that, they're like, I want something different.
Yeah. So
you can only have Neapolitan ice cream so many times in your life before you just want to melt it all and get something else. Like,
so
I don't know.
I have two nice points.
I mean, I would say that about just one part of Neapolitan. Like, I don't want strata.
Yeah, I have 2 points, but
no,
they have nothing to do with Neapolitan.
Worst Neapolitan. Chalk is the worst.
So, Spider-Verse is really an excellent film.
Excellent.
I was really excited for that one. I guess what I was thinking about is you think about comics, the genre of comics, printed comics. Lots of different artists working on them, a lot of different writers working on them. And you're not going to collect every single comic that's out there, right? There's going to be a couple of tentpole comics that you need to read. They're going to turn into graphic novels. And those are the ones that I feel that they're trying to turn into the big tentpole movies, right? But now I think we're getting to a point with some of these movies where it's getting too deep into the geekdom, where it's like, oh, there's Granny Goodness. Great, we see her for the first time. Does anybody really care about DC's Granny Goodness?
That is actually a really good point. And this is the other thing. The MC kind of shared universe, right? Where the idea behind the MCU was the whole idea behind comic books when they did the end of year cross issue. Gigantic,
the 64 page, right?
Yeah, because it tied in the 27 different published books that Marvel made and made sure you bought all of them in order to follow along with the story. It's like, well, why don't we translate that over into a cinematic experience? Very novel, very exciting the first time, but when you're expected to go through 30 plus movies just to figure out why someone hates someone else because of what their father did, it becomes less of a entertainment experience and more of homework.
This is a debate, right? So I'm going to debate you on this. So,
all right.
I think the reason that there's cinema, there's movies, these films that get made that are contained stories and they're beautifully done and all this stuff. And then there's genre, right? So there's science fiction genre. Horror and all these things that are, because of their nature, are really sort of serialized. And I look at something like Star Trek on television is thriving right now. Star Trek in the theaters, not so much. And when you watch a Star Trek movie, they try and turn it from a serialized adventure into an independent thing that is, you don't need a lot of backstory to figure out what's going on and all that stuff. And it's just not interesting. And to your points, it is the same story over and over and over again, right? Whereas you look at an entire serialized thing and you've got time to flesh out characters and have a overarching arc and all this other stuff. So you look at the first tranche of superhero movies, the whole Avengers arc, that was done like a serialized television show. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It was like 30 movies or whatever it was, 25 movies, that told a complete story. And then that stopped. And now it's just this kind of weird morass of it's just not working.
Part of it is eventually you write yourself into a corner. Like once you do something to this set of characters that you've already explained in a movie that most people haven't seen, it influences a movie that people are going to watch, and then you need to know there's this kind of whole legacy kind of fandom wiki that you need to understand, which is really annoying at some point when all you want to do is watch a movie after you've had dinner with your wife or friends, and you just want to have a good time, because then you got to think about it. And oftentimes, it's just like, just have the information coalesced into this movie. And this is why I still think a lot of the Star Wars movies and actually TV streaming shows haven't done so as well as the original trilogy. And goes to what you were saying, Rob DeMillo, is that they're trying to serialize something that I don't think it really is fit for. Like, if you did a Star Wars movie and you didn't need to know all the nuances of Thrawn, of Ahsoka. Like, Ahsoka makes sense if you're a fan of the Clone Wars.
Which is why I haven't gotten into it, because I'm like, I don't know Rebels. I didn't read the
And so there is amount of homework you need to do. And I think some people, it's like, listen, I have 20 different options for entertainment. I can watch a streaming show from scratch. I can watch like Beef on Netflix or get into K-pop like Tom, or I can start a new video game. I can do something, but I don't need to work like 20 hours in just so I can sit down and relax.
Although sometimes that's fun.
Well,
I think it's fun in the way that if you're really pedantic and you want to paint all your Warhammer 40K figurines in your faction color and have your backstory written up.
This goes back to the television show thing, right? So it's like when you start watching a TV show and it's part of this larger narrative, then you get curious about the narrative and it's good for the show because you can go back and watch the old stuff and you can get excited. But when you're in a film, you just want to go eat some popcorn and shut the hell up.
The other part of it, I think, and I think maybe this is something that we've sort of covered here, and this is just content overload, right? Roger, you mentioned you have so many options like streaming. You can go to YouTube. You can watch Twitch shows if you want. There's so many different options. It's content overload, and you don't have enough time in the day to invest to watch all of these things. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. I was considering watching The Flash tonight, but I'm like, I could be playing games with my family.
It's so weird you say that, Len, because ever since the writer's strike, my wife and I predominantly just watch YouTube because it's short, condensed, 10-minute videos.
That worries me too, though.
I'm not making my life 10 minutes at a time, all right? Besides, it's serialized. right? Just go back to the channel.
A lot of people are, though, because the short content stuff, I'm a little concerned by it. Because
I mean, you lose the biggest,
who's going to invest in a 2-hour film or a 20 episode?
Yeah, but on YouTube, I sit down and I watch a half an hour video of a woman making lunch bento boxes for her husband, like a week of bento boxes. No story. It's just fun to watch her cook. So it's
like an ASMR type thing?
A little bit, yeah.
One of the
joys of YouTube is watching street cooking, like just, people from just cooking food on the street because there is a very zen atmosphere. So if you're doing something else, it's just there, right? You don't need to worry about who hates who or or who's up and coming, and you don't have all these dramatic plot points that you have to think. It's like this guy's just throwing in the bean sprouts right now, and they're swirling around the wok. Throwing more sesame oil.
It's all That's very fascinating.
It's all very logical.
Now I'm hungry.
I don't know. I always feel like I get a little tip here and there where I'm like, fish sauce. Interesting. I'll try that next time.
Chugging fish sauce.
Yeah. Don't chug fish. Ooh, God.
The scooter exhaust. That's what I was missing.
That makes it delicious.
I get it. That's the kind of stuff I go to YouTube for, too. It's like, I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to insulate my attic.
I mean,
I go for that stuff. But
insulate my attic. That's a good one.
But where I get concerned is I don't want to watch morons running their skateboard into somebody's car.
That is Rob DeMillo. Sorry, not to drag the other Rob.
Yeah, don't yell at Rob Greenwood.
I mean, the content there on YouTube is very broad, right? Like, I don't watch, I don't watch Fail Army anymore. And I don't watch News Be Funny anymore, but I do watch things like Tasting History with Max Miller. He's a guy up in San Francisco who basically cooks recipes from throughout history, whether it's from like Roman or Byzantine times to something from the Great Depression or right after World War II. And it's very interesting because it's like a little nugget of history, but bite size. I'm out where I'm done in and out in 10 minutes, and then I can see why my kids are screaming.
I gotta be honest with you guys. I watch Max only for the I binge Property Brothers
I learned from Property Brothers? Open concept, Lynn. Everything needs to be open.
Yes, everything is open concept.
But don't you love when people are like, I love this for entertaining. And I'm how often are you entertaining?
What I love is that they, the person is like a they don't have really jobs, but they have, their budget is $200 million or something. It's like, what? How can you afford this house? You know, it's like ridiculous.
Million? Who's doing that?
I don't know. It's usually like our budget is like $2 million or something. But
no, I know what you mean though. Like sometimes we were like, okay, this is a cool place. Let's update the kitchen for $90,000.
Right. It always takes them six weeks for the entire reno, right?
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
I like it because it's sort of brainless. There's a clear
payoff.
Yes. And you know exactly what's going to happen.
I want to see the reveal, yes. And then everyone's happy.
There's always a problem.
Even if they aren't, that the production crew is like, well, you better look happy.
And you know, could it be, it's maybe just our age. Like, we don't have the brain cells anymore to take in all this information.
It's because...
I'm going to watch your backsplash put up. That's more exciting to me
than a fight between superheroes. It's because they learn that people leave those channels running even if they're not paying attention.
Yeah. So besides, you have a backsplash to put up. So
I don't think anyone really sit through an entire talk show. They just like get up in the middle of it, you know?
Roger, that's a great point. You don't have to actively watch those shows.
Right.
They can be on and you're paying attention to them and you see what happens, but you can walk away for 30, 40 seconds, come back and you really haven't missed anything because as long as you see the reveal, as long as you see what the contrived drama is that helps make that show, you're pretty much good. So you're right. They're just kind of on and they just play and they run ads and people tend not to switch away. They'll just let the ads play because they're already up and walking around anyway.
And which is interesting because in many ways, superhero movies or even shows are very formulaic.
You're bringing it back around. That's good.
Not unlike home renovation reality shows because they're all very, okay, this is where you introduce the people and the project. This is what you need to get done. You bring the expert. This is where things go wrong. This is, we didn't budget for a new sink or we didn't budget for this giant hole in the middle of the house. You know, suddenly you have the conflict. And I think this is the problem with superhero movies, which is why the same story. It's always either some variation of a hero's journey or it's some variation on building the team together, like getting the team to work together.
Yeah.
Where at the end, they finally understand that cooperation is the key to defeating the big bad. And that's how right? And the one that came up recently now is the big thing, is the cooperation, but now it's family, right? Fast and the Furious, all about family. Shazam, all about family. The Avengers, it's a different kind of family. Batman, we have a dysfunctional, but we need to work together family.
We're always fighting, but in the end, we love one another.
Yeah, and that's
laser beams.
That's what, and I think a lot of people just like.
Really?
You know what you gotta have? This is what you have to have. You have to have someone like Wes Anderson or James Gunn direct Property Brothers episodes. Then you're gonna have to pay attention to every little thing, right, that happens.
I'm gonna say I watched. I know I'm gonna get a lot of flack for this, but I watched Guardians of the Galaxy 3, and I can only give it like a C+.
I liked it.
It was fun. I thought it was maybe 25 minutes too long. It recycled a lot of the same.
The rocket story was great.
I'm going to spoil it for everyone right now. But the rocket story to me is the most contrived. Form of cinematic pathos I have ever seen. It's all about bad for this raccoon. I make you cry. I'm going to put all the crying scenes in there.
That's heartless.
No, it's because I'm immune to being manipulated that way. I'm manipulatable. A manipulated.
You cheered when Bambi's mother died.
Has said, on this show many times before that he's like not that into having pet raccoons. I don't understand it, but that's what he said.
I mean, like, it's the thing is, it's obvious to me. Like when I watch, it's like, oh, okay, this is where I'm supposed to feel bad for him and have a tear for a CGI character. Well, all his like actual like flesh and blood castmates are there, like, you know, dodging laser beams and going through like all sorts of hoops to save him. But I mean, I liked it, but at the same time, it's like, I've seen this movie before. I just watched Dungeons and Dragons. And it's like, oh wow, this is a great movie. It's like someone took ChatGPT and said, make me a Dungeons and Dragons movie, but all the influences are from Marvel. So here's all the Marvel stuff, just pumping out a movie that has
Dungeons. Draw me like your D&D girl.
Yeah. So all right, real quick, round the table. What was the last superhero movie y'all liked? I'll go with.
Okay, you go.
Suicide Squad 2. I'll go with that.
Wait, which one was it?
Suicide Squad 2.
Oh, yeah. I would say, like, I like sat through. Actually, I liked Suicide Squad 2. I liked it. I would get. I gave it a B minus.
I really like Spider Verse.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Rob Dunwood.
Me too. The cartoon Spider Mans are awesome.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent.
Miles Morales.
I don't really have an answer.
Did you see the Barbie movie?
Take one of ours.
Yeah, I saw the Barbie movie.
So here's the thing about the Barbie movie.
Kind of a superhero movie in a weird way.
So a little bit. So Mattel is looking at that movie as like, oh, we can make more movies about toys. They're missing the point of that film. The reason why it's good is because there's a heart to it, there's a brain to it.
No. And it's, you don't understand.
I have no idea how that movie didn't miss the point.
They saw the money that rolled in.
Right. Well, like, that is the point.
I don't know how that movie got made. So I didn't want to see it. I was actively not going to see it because I knew Mattel had an involvement in it. And I'm like, well, this is just going to be one damned ad for right. Mattel crap.
Which it kind of was.
No, it was not. I went there and it was like they crapped all over that company. Right. Like how in the heck did this even make it out? Like, did they watch it? Did they have any editorial control over it? Like, what is happening? And it was great. Like, I loved it. I thought it was really amazing. But it was like they made fun of the executive board, they made fun of the customers, they made fun of their products, they
made fun of the creator.
They're made fun of the creative. Unbelievable. Like,
you know what? A lot of zeros.
Well, self-referential, you know, stuff like that sometimes tends to work in a company's favor.
But on a corporate level like that, I mean, it was brutal. Like, it was brutal.
Yeah.
So,
it was.
Well, yeah. I mean,
well, you know
also,
what?
Listen, I like the movie. It's a strange movie. Mm-hmm. It's definitely not like Mattel made the movie. No,
they will try to make a sequel. They will try to make another movie.
Yes.
But there's no way it can possibly. It's not going to do $2 billion.
No, they already are. You know what the next movie is? Uno. They're making an Uno movie.
Oh, it's going to be like Knives Out, I guarantee. All right. I want to thank everyone in the Twitch chat room for supporting us. Brian M64, Lion Jim Video, Moose2271, Zoe, for cheering us on with bits. And Firelighter70 for resubscribing with Prime. Thank you all for supporting the show.
Over on the Patreon side, and sorry, this is still... okay, here we go. All right, well, we do have new patron Eric. Yay, Eric! We didn't get any raises. We hope that everybody has a very, very wonderful holiday weekend if you're in the U.S. For everybody else, good weekend nonetheless. And it was really fun to be with you all, and we will see you back here next week. Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Good day.